Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everyone today to On Point. I'm your host Don Allen in Studio B, and over in Studio A, we have Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing on this beautiful Saturday
and afternoon? Co-host, doing real good, Don. A beautiful day here in the Twin Cities. So we'll probably have at least two more blizzards probably in March, maybe mad one in April. But what the heck, we're basically 60 days from stable weather. I mean, in the sense of temperature will start to go up. In fact, I think the forecast is for 40 degrees next Friday.
Oh, wow.
So you begin to see the pattern emerge. The temperatures will start sticking around the 40s and then move into the 50s, et cetera. So great, great time, if you will. Great time for democracy. Don, you got that voter registration card, by the way. Want to make sure we touch on that today, because I don't think you're going to be able to vote after April.
Yeah, I guess Mr. Edwards is going to be asking me how many the letter T's are in the Constitution here.
That's right. And boy, if you don't know that, you know, then you disqualified to be a voter. Looks like the Civil Rights Voting Act of 1965, signed by the Honorable Lyndon Baines Johnson, is getting ready to come to an end. You know.
Yes.
Justice Scalia said that the Voting Rights Act is a racial entitlement.
Oh,
so
wow.
I guess that means that white folks holding black people as slaves was a racial entitlement too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was racial entitlement. So anyway, what we got, Don, let's move on into it. I'll give the phone number out in case anybody wants to.
Sure. That phone number that you dial is 347-426-3904. Our toll-free number is 877-573-2878. And again, the phone lines are open at 347-426-3904 to call in, and we'd like to hear from you today on this beautiful Saturday afternoon. And Mr. Edwards, I'd just like to say while we get started here is that we had a beautiful event today at Sunnyside Restaurant from 10 a.m. till 1 today. It was Buy Black today, along with a political, educational, and economic roundtable discussion where, you know, there were no leaders, there were no rules, except be respectful and come have breakfast in a local business in North Minneapolis and talk about what was on your mind. We had about 20-25 people show up, and it was really great. And I'd like to thank everyone for coming out, and join us next month in April 6th, for when we rate the local television stations on how they cover news in the black community.
That should be interesting. I may have to adjust my schedule and come to attend that meeting myself as a black journalist. Yeah. Wow, that should be interesting. Okay. So April 6th, let's keep that date in mind. We're going to take a look at the quality of broadcasting, particularly as it's directed towards the African-American community. I imagine that means stations like WCCO, right? The great WCCO, Pathfinder, if you will.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk about WCCO, about Fox 9 News, after the morning show. Well, you know, the morning show on Fox 9 News, Mr. Edwards, has been rated. The group, the ad hoc group that comes together is called African American and Friends Against Mainstream Media.
Oh, okay.
And what they do is they sit down and they consistently be given that morning show at Fox 9 News and A+. And probably because of Dawn Stevens and Keith Marler and the other news anchor there. And they do a really good job of being broad and engaging people on social media. But when the 9 morning news goes off, Fox sinks to a whole new low, and they're equivalent to WCCO, Channel 11. And you know, I know people that work at Channel 11 that have said that, you know, their staff is so white that you have to put on shades, sunglasses to...
Oh, you'd be blinded.
Be blinded,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they haven't done anything over there since, what was her name, Battle, one of your relatives.
Oh, yeah.
was forced out, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, you know, the scene is they pick up just enough coloring, if you will. Though I notice a lot of Hispanics all of a sudden have been showing up on all the stations.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what do we got, man? I understand there's some concern about the events over there at Washburn, though that thing has pretty much died to that extent. But I'm saying you've come in possession of some startling information. I mean, like, we are not surprised, but lay it out to us, Doc.
Well, here's what's going, Mr. Edwards. You know, I was just kind of curious about what's going on at Washburn High. And, you know, just recently over the last week, week and a half here, Israeli person, I guess, walked into Washburn and it made all the newspapers, and the school went on lockdown. And I was wondering, you know, is anybody calling the police, or how is this being handled? Is the school responsible for policing itself? And I mean, Mr. Edwards, I have a lot of unanswered questions, and I wasn't able to get a response back from the Minneapolis Public Schools marketing department or communicate or whatever they call themselves.
Communication director, Stanley Allen,
whatever they call themselves over there, yeah. And so I have in my possession intercepted a signed letter from Sergeant William Palmer of the Minneapolis Police Department. He's a public information officer.
Yeah.
And it reads, "To whom it may concern, dated February 21st, 2013. To whom it may concern, following my research into the matter, I state that no police report has been filed with the Minneapolis Police Department regarding any incident at Washburn High School, 201 West 49th Street, since January 1st, 2013. From my research with the Minneapolis Public Schools District, the incident which you are inquiring occurred on January 11th, 2013. I strongly suggest you contact the Minneapolis School District regarding this matter. Sincerely, Sergeant William Palmer." Mr. Edwards, can you decipher that for me at all?
Well, what it means, Don, is that the district lied back on the week of January 10th through the 15th, when they made it appear that on the day and the occasion of the hanging in effigy of a black doll that was supposedly depict a black baby, if you will, that no police call was made. The police were not called, even though it certainly created some problems with tension. On and about the 15th of January, a number of TV stations here implied that there was a thorough investigation going on, and et cetera, by the authorities. And part of it had to do with the emergence of neo-Nazis, which no one talks about nowadays. A group of neo-Nazis from down in Faribault, Minnesota, the American white supremacist group, neo-Nazis, et cetera, actually came up to Washburn and were seen in the vicinity by intelligence agents for Homeland Security, you know, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, et cetera. Anyways,
yes,
no complaint was ever filed. And part of the reason was when the four students three were suspended, one was expelled. And when that happened, the white parents of the four students rallied and brought together a mass of white parents in the Washburn School District. In the initial letter that went out indicating the suspension / expulsions, the principal, who, by the way, was not at school that Friday when that incident happened, indicated that the youngsters had been involved in a racial incident, racially motivated, displaying racial animus. Mm-hmm. And some very powerful, you know, Caucasians in that part of town. By the way, for our listening audience domestically and internationally, Washburn is like kind of in the southwestern corner of our beloved city. And so the parents demanded of Superintendent Bernadette Johnson and others that any reference to racial animus and et cetera be withdrawn from the letter, post haste. And it was. It was. And so the letters were redrafted and sent back out and reflected something about the fact that the students had been involved in some inappropriate policies, if you will.
Yeah.
And so what happened was that kind of set the tone for the level of concern, if you will, and then the district continued to make it appear that there was a thorough investigation, et cetera. In fact, I'm told that the young man who was expelled because of the racial animus that he was promoting and that he organized against the African-American race, that he had no action whatsoever taken. And here's the reason. When you're expelled in the state of Minnesota, not suspended, even though in suspensions you have due process, but when you're expelled, which is the most egregious disciplinary action, you have to have a hearing presided over by an administrative law judge.
Mm.
And the word is, at one point WCCO was saying that they were going to go into court and sue to get access to all the information. That was all a bluff, okay? Nothing ever happened. But there is no record, Mr. Allen, with the state of Minnesota's Department of Administration, which provides and assigns administrative law judges and et cetera, because you have to have an administrative law judge by statute. There was never a hearing. And
wow.
So many are saying that that there really was never an expulsion, that they just sent him to some other school.
Yeah, and Mr. Edwards, our phone line switchboard has lit up, and I think that we should start getting some of these calls.
Oh, let's do it. Let's hear about it.
And we'll go in order that they've called. Hello, caller. You're live on the air. Your question or comment?
Hello, this is Lisa.
Hey, Lisa. Hello. How are you?
Well, I guess I'm the first caller. But I am calling. I guess I have a few things that I wanted to say from what you guys are talking about. And I was driving up the street today, and I saw a sign put up in North Minneapolis on Penn and Laurie. And I guess, you know, in relation to when we talk about the media and how images are described through the media about North Minneapolis, you know, and people who don't live in North Minneapolis and how they see the North Side, that's very important. So this sign to me is disturbing. I don't know if, you know, it may seem creative, but it's disturbing. And the sign said, what I would like to be before I die.
Yeah.
Had a spot where people could fill out, you know, what they want to be. And some people put rich, you know, I want to, you know, there's a lot of things that they put. But it's kind of disturbing because I don't think that if we put this in the same neighborhood, in every neighborhood in the state, then some people will want that put down because we don't want that image put out there. And I think that the people behind it, the Cleveland group or whatever, I don't, you know, Cleveland, I don't think that neighborhood is even called Cleveland. I don't know. But I think that whoever did it, if they're listening or referred to listen to this show, they should have put something opposite to that as far as why I want to live instead of before I die.
Ms. Lisa, just let me interrupt you for a minute. I'm actually, through Google Maps, I'm actually using a satellite uplink in the studio and actually looking at the sign there on the northwest corner, if I'm not mistaken, or actually, no, the northeast-west corner of Penn and Laurie. It says, before I die. Here goes some of the answers. Before I die, I want to be rich. Before I die, I want to be wealthy. There's one on here that says, before I die, I'd like to get pussy. And so people are writing all kinds of things on this sign that is up here that was brought to you by the Cleveland Neighborhood Association. And I'm reading this straight from the sign as I view it right now in real time.
Well, I would tell you that if you're viewing that, it can't be in real time because I did erase it. and this was recently.
I'm looking at it right now.
So someone must have went back, because there was no chalk there, but I did erase that because it's something that we don't need in our community, in the black community, period. No. They should put that in a billboard and put it somewhere downtown, but get it out of that community and put some positive reinforcement instead of reinforcing these negative stereotypes in that community, because, you know, that there's, it's time out for that. So
okay.
I understand the mission, but they need to reconsider when they put things out there and get the input of the community, and that's what I really wanted to say.
Yeah, I guess
But I wanted to say something else, I could, about the Washburn incident. And I wanted to say that, you know, we as a community, we did follow up with that. And I wanted to say that, you know, these are children, and if this is something that they have learned from, then we want them to learn from that. We don't want to traumatize them and really continue to keep talking about this, because we have other things in our community that we need to be dealing with. And I just wanted to say that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
You see, we do have to continue to talk about it, because it has a lot to do with integrity, transparency, and felicity. It was the Minneapolis School District, a multi, you know, million-dollar institution that allegedly teaches values to our students, who indicated that there had been police reports filed, that there had been expulsions, and et cetera. And all that is not true. That's untrue. And so, you know, you cannot let an institution that supposedly is involved in the teaching and the instruction in the arts of value and integrity and et cetera, get away with that kind of trash, you know.
Yeah.
And let me just say on the science, you know, I'm not surprised by that. And one of the situations that's emerged that no one, by the way, is talking about, because the black community is really not informed. About a month ago, a white businessman created a paintball operation just behind the B gas station there on, I think it's 2913 2nd Street North, Don. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Where people can go in and shoot each other with paint guns. Now, you know, when you talk about a sign, but when you talk in terms of that kind of exercise, that's the last thing we need in close proximity to the black community, is folks to be able to be encouraged to run in and shoot each other with paint guns and be involved in survivalist tactics. Now, this business used to be over there by KSTP. What happened, some development by the University of Minnesota and others forced this business out over there, and this Caucasian owner has relocated in North Minneapolis. Again, I think the address is 2913 2nd Street North. And so, you know, that's another situation that maybe folks need to be concerned with. Maybe the leaders can give an explanation. Don Samuels can give an explanation on why there was no proper notification or even public hearing on that. So, anyways, for those that want to practice their shooting, killing each other, you can do that by going to the paintball gun shop there in North Minneapolis.
And we have another caller.
Let's go.
Caller, you are live on the air. You've been holding for quite some time. Hello. Hello, caller. We'll try this again. Okay. I hear the show in the background, and they must not be paying much attention, but maybe they'll call back. Again, those phone lines are open. The number is 347-426-3904. Toll-free number is 877-537-4878. Give us a call. Yeah, Mr. Edwards, it was that sign thing, just looking at it just now, you know, from the satellite imagery, is like, I mean, there's some crazy stuff written up there. Something that could say, something that cannot say. So, but anyway. Yeah.
Absolutely. But like I said, again, I'm not surprised, you know, the paintball gun shop, if you will, where they're over there shooting and encouraging people to learn how to shoot and carry out warlike activities and et cetera. And I know that somebody will say, well, better to have that than to have, you know, people actually shooting each other with live ammunition. If that's your defense for that kind of activities, then you're really not understanding what is going on and what the gun paintball doctrine and philosophy is really all about. Sad commentary. What else we got,
yeah.
Don?
Well, here's something I was a little concerned about, Mr. Edwards. As you know, as I, you know, we discussed in production meeting, The Minneapolis Foundation, through the Minneapolis Economic Development Association and the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce, has figured out a way to funnel $300,000 to the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce. And some might say that's a success. Someone might say that's wonderful, but we see articles in the Insight News celebrating this drop in the bucket of pennies. But I don't think people know the background or the whole story. You know, Target granted North Minneapolis $300,000 in 2003 when they decided to move out of that Cub Food, where Cub Food is right now, move out of that location because of high loss, theft, et cetera, a variety of excuses they came up with.
Mm-hmm.
And so before they left, they said, okay, we're going to leave you guys $300,000 for businesses on Broadway Avenue. So 10 years later.
That was guilt money, right. I remember.
Remember. And so 10 years later, they figure out how to get the money to the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce, which if you look at their history, Mr. Edwards, and I mean, I don't even really have to be too critical other than just look at their history. They have not created or sustained one organization in the last 5 to 10 years, if not longer. And it's a one-person shop. And I guess my problem is the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce is going into the banking business because they want to give $25,000 loans, not grants, to these local businesses on Broadway or in North Minneapolis. Actually, it's opened up for any small business. So it's not just concentrated in North Minneapolis. Now, that becomes problematic, Mr. Edwards, because you and I sat through many of the NCRT tornado meetings, and we learned that, you know, there were less than, 3% of the people in North Minneapolis, including homeowners and business owners, that would even qualify for a loan, a Small Business Association loan or administration loan to fix up their properties.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that said, I mean, what was their thinking? Who will qualify for $25,000 loan from Minnesota?
Now, let me ask a question, Ms. Allen.
Okay.
I understand this money has been in an account under the custody and control of the Minneapolis Foundation for 10 years?
For 10 years.
Okay, so it's more than $300,000. So what did the Minneapolis Foundation do with the interest that they drew on that money? That's probably about $30,000 just in interest alone.
Yeah. Well, I talked to Ms. Joanne Stately, who told me that this was a donor-advised fund. And I said, well, who are the advisors for the donor-advised funds? And she said that is confidential. She says we can send the money and spend the money how we want to.
So when did they actually give the money to whoever it is they gave it to? I mean, when? In the last year, week? 5 or 6 years ago.
They will not confirm the exact day that they granted the money through MITA for the Minnesota Chamber.
MITA, I'm sorry. That was a misstatement. MITA, what was MITA's role?
MITA is the overseers, the slave handlers for the Minnesota Black Chamber.
Wait a minute. I'm confused, Mr. Allen. I'm not the brightest black man in America. Now, Target, the big, powerful Target, whose headquarters is here in downtown Minneapolis, gave $300,000 of quote-unquote apology dollars to the community because they decided to bail out, close down the Target store, which was only about 6 or 7 years old, because of theft and et cetera, et cetera. They give the $300,000 to the powerful Minneapolis Foundation, headquartered here in Minneapolis.
Yes, sir.
Minneapolis Foundation receives the money in 2003. And why is it so confidential and so secretive when they gave the money out and how much interest they drew on the money and who the quote-unquote special committee was? I mean, why is all this so secretive?
Well, here's what the problem is. This would probably begins and continues, Mr. Edwards, because the Minneapolis Foundation, too, like other organizations, have decided that there are certain people who speak for the community in North Minneapolis, and there are certain people who do not.
Yeah.
So what they have done is they have gotten a advisory group of people who they consider legitimate, and this donor-advised fund, they decided how the money would process out of the Minneapolis Foundation.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I understand all of that.
Yeah.
My question is, with, you know, detail, specificity, and et cetera, I mean, when was the committee set up? When did they begin to make their recommendations? When were checks cut to specific businesses and et cetera? I mean, was it 2005? Was it 2009? Was it 2011? Was it just last week? I mean, I just don't understand why that's all so secretive.
Yeah, well, Ms. Harris, as what they told me is that, you know, that information is confidential. They don't have to tell me or anybody else that information. So I would impose.
Well, maybe they gave some of the money to a madrasa. I mean, no, I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe that's something that they did and they wanted to keep secret and confidential from, you know, right wing zealots here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So you say it's in the form of loans. Now the Minneapolis Foundation, the African American or the Negro Chamber of Commerce is now in the lending business.
Yeah, they switched from being a failure at businesses to going into the banking business.
Okay, well, after what I saw done to Franklin National Bank, which is a properly chartered lending institution, I don't know that I'd be very comfortable with seeing all that happening around here.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I don't know. I'm a little confused because I asked. Target. I've sent letters to Yvonne Chung Ho from the Minneapolis Economic Development Association, MEDA, to ask her to explain the process. And Target, MEDA, and the Minneapolis Foundation all tell me to contact Ms. Leah Haggard, who is the executive director of the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce.
Okay, now that's a one person operation, correct?
Yeah, that's a one-person operation. There are no board members listed on their website. There is no meeting information. There is nothing to so that there could be some public discourse or conversations.
Well, let me ask you this question, Mr. So who does the advisory – oh, I'm sorry. That's back downtown with the Minneapolis Foundation. I was kind of wondering who reports to who.
Yeah, well, it's as far as Minneapolis Foundation is concerned, I had an at-length conversation with Ms. Joanne Stately. I'd have to contact Ms. Leah Haggard if I want any answers. She would have to be the one to give me these answers. And, Mr. Edwards, I've been trying to contact her since June 2012. She has not responded to one email, one letter, or anything.
Okay, well, now I have to be like kind of like a prosecutor here.
Mm-hmm.
Or Grand Inquisitor during the time of the Spanish Inquisition. So how did MEDA, Minneapolis Economic Development, whatever, so how did they become a player in this? Was some of the $300,000 designated for them by Target in 2003?
Well, here's what happens with an agency like MEDA. MEDA has their hands in anything that is routed to the minority ethnic community, from the Asians to the Hispanics to the Blacks. And this has been seen in the Department of Minnesota Department of Transportation for RFPs that went out for capital.
So they're kind of like the big overseer, the big white
overseer
for
kind
of like economic development and the slave community. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, they have a process already in place. We're gonna put all the qualifiers there. That way you Negroes don't give the money to your friends, okay? We'll make sure that their people are qualified, or in this case, unqualified to get this money, and we're going to take our administration fee off the top. Because trust me, Mr. Edwards, I mean, there are chamber of commerces in Minnesota that deal with millions and millions of dollars.
Uh-huh.
And then the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce gets $300,000, and they have to route it through a
10 years ago.
Another agency. Yeah, and so it just doesn't make any sense. But we have
now. Let me ask you a question. This MEDA, the Metropolitan, actually it's Metropolitan Economic. Now this is the same MEDA or slash organization that is involved with the job creation and workforce development and et cetera. On the People's Stadium, the big Minnesota Viking billion-dollar stadium, right?
Yes, it's the same guy. But this side is running through the executive director, Yvonne Chung Ho, who I actually sent an email to.
Yeah.
And I used to have an office next to hers downtown there in the Cross Tower. Yes.
So, okay, so Mita's involved and et cetera. Okay, well, maybe there'll be an accounting at some point or another where the community will be able to look to see where some portion of that $300,000 went. Boy, that $300,000 has been in play for a long time, 10 years. Woo!
Yeah.
You know, but clearly Target got all that off its conscience.
Yeah.
What else we got? What else we got, Don, as we watch the development of the African-American community?
Huh, the development go down the tube. Well, we
want to deal with voting thing, and let's give the number out. Maybe we've got a couple calls from outside.
Yeah, we do have a caller now.
Oh, let's get them.
A caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm just listening in the queue.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Just listening on the queue. Okay.
Yeah, we'll put you in the queue.
Voter registration, you know, we kind of made a little joke here, though it's not a laughing matter, but the Voting Rights Act of Civil Rights Act, 1965, is in constitutional jeopardy as we speak. The United States Supreme Court will be making a ruling, particularly on Article 5, which really is the heart and soul of if you African-Americans are going to be allowed to, quote-unquote, have any rights whatsoever at the voting polls. And this will start as early as the Supreme Court making a decision, and they could make a decision as early as May or June, certainly before the court recesses in, what is it, July. What the heck have we got going on here, Don? Because I can well remember as an older African-American the enthusiasm, if you will, the euphoria from black Americans when Lyndon Baines Johnson, president of the United States, the gentleman from Texas, signed that into law after we had suffered so many fatalities, bombings, and et cetera. Justice Scalia said that it is nothing more than a racial entitlement, said that the Negroes are not entitled to have any rights that go with voting. I mean, that's my clear interpretation. I've had a chance to read some of the preliminary opinions. Are these folks, I mean, I got to ask you this question in the tradition of Richard Pryor. Don, tell me it ain't so. The white folks is not getting ready to take away our voting rights again, are they?
Yeah, well, it sounds very interesting because I read a couple things that were rather shocking, including what some left-wing propaganda folks are trying to put forward, talking about what does not expire and what does expire. And I'm actually looking at it over here in Studio B, looking at a piece of paper, The Ban on Tests or Devices, 42 U.S.C. 1973 AA. And just one short paragraph. It says, the Voting Rights Act, 42 U.S.C. 1973 AA, bans the use of any test or device for registering or voting in any federal, state, or local elections. A test or device, including literacy, understanding, or interpretation tests, educational or knowledge requirements, good character tests, proof of qualification by vouchers from third parties, or registration procedures or election conducts solely in English, where a single language minority comprises more than 5% of the voting age population of the jurisdiction. Language minorities are defined as American Indians, Asian Americans, Alaskan Natives, and those of Spanish heritage. The ban on these tests is nationwide and permanent. So they're saying that might not expire, but the language is so tricky in these bills, Mr. Edwards, that I'm having some trouble even getting a grasp.
Well, see, it doesn't. It's immaterial now if it expires or not. That fake debate about if it expires or not is superfluous, given that the Supreme Court will issue an opinion on the constitutionality, particularly, again, of Article 5 of the Voting Rights Act. And Justice Scalia has basically indicated they have the necessary 5 votes on the Supreme Court. In fact, during the preliminary discussion last Thursday, Justice Thomas of the original Amos and Andes sat and did not have a single question to ask as a preliminary reflection was being put forward by attorneys. In fact, let me just give you the genesis. This case comes out of a place in Alabama, just north of Birmingham,
mm-hmm.
where for only a couple years ago, for only the second time in the history of this particular municipality, a Negro was elected to the city council. And what happened was in within a period of a couple of years under redistricting and et cetera, his district went from 68% black to 27%, and of course he was defeated. So the Justice Department stepped in under the provisions of Article 5 of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, and in fact had the election overturned, and the brother was voted back into his seat because the lines were made null and void. Well, Alabama, if you will, and the county, the Pacific County, challenged this in the Supreme Court, and it's finally worked its way up. And in the meanwhile, unfortunately, the Obama administration either didn't have the time or the inclination or whatever to take note of it. The Black Congressional Caucus has been sounding a warning for a couple of years. The civil rights leadership, if you will, whatever that is, black leadership, did not see the importance of putting together a strategy. And so what's happened now, the Supreme Court has the case. And if they've got the 5 votes, and it looks like the swing vote could be Justice Kennedy again, you're going to have a problem, Mr. Allen. And you can rest assured your baby son will not have the opportunity to find himself not under challenge when he becomes of voting age based on instruments and et cetera that will be put in place. And I'm just, you know, it's really kind of sad as one who came out of the era of the 1960s, watched black people die, being shot down and like dogs, being churches being blown up, little girls being killed and et cetera for the right to vote. And we've just been mute. You know, it's been like, you know, somebody took and, you know, cut our testicles off. And it's really sad because the momentum, if you will, is in full play right now. And I'm afraid that we're going to see a historical event here in the United States, and we're going to see a reversal and federal guarantees taken away as it pertains to the right to vote. Interesting situation.
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting what's going on, and I'm just, you know, I'm checking it out. And Section 5 ACLU has put out a big piece on the Section 5, and I will post it in the chat room for people to check that out. But, yeah, that was just – The whole voting rights thing, you know, when I look at it, Mr. Edwards, I look at it as, you know, okay, President Obama in the first 4 years had an opportunity to just kind of extend that like Bush did when he was in office.
In 2006, that's right.
Yeah. And so I don't know what was the thinking of the Obama administration in general and why wouldn't that just be, you know, some things should just be an automatic, but I think that also should send a message to those out there who are entrenched in the local, well, I'll just keep it local because I don't have to sling stones to D.C. I think that people should be aware of what's going on and some of the misdirects that they're seeing, even with the vote no campaigns and things like this. I know, Mr. Edwards, you don't agree on me with me because on your liberal side and my conservative side over here in the Studio B, but we talk on the issues so we can do this and have, you know, open public discourse and agree to disagree at points, and then, but more so agree to agree on a lot more other things. But when you look at this, you know, why haven't we been informed? Why haven't, even going back to the point that we were making about the $300,000 with the Minneapolis Foundation, that was never vetted to the community. Minneapolis Black Chamber of Commerce never came and said, hey, this is what we want to do. Let's have input from the local businesses in Minneapolis. But they had some advisors who we are unaware of, overseers, decide that this is the best thing for it. And, again, we have another failed mission or another failed attempt of engagement where, yeah, someone's going to get their salary for the next year, but there's always 2014 coming around and they'll have to figure out another scam or move.
Well, the teabaggers are already indicating that they will be able to make a rather significant comeback within the political arena, be it the federal Congress, state legislatures, or et cetera, with the ability to do what happened in 2000. I can still see those large numbers of African-American students from Florida A&M being denied by armed white police in Tallahassee from going to vote during that 2000 election. That was the election of, quote-unquote, the Chads and et cetera. And that was a very painful situation way back in 2000. And we've seen it now every presidential election, 4, 8, and 12. And we don't necessarily disagree. I do think that the liberal wing of American politics let us down again. That's something we talked about on a program here on one of our local commercial stations doing Black History, yourself, myself, and the professor of African American Studies, et cetera, at the University of Minnesota, very gifted young man. I'm not surprised, though. I looked at all the effort and concern here in the state of Minnesota that the liberals pushed many of our leaders into about some of the constitutional amendments, gays and lesbians being taken care of, same-sex marriage, and all that kind of stuff. And you never see anything meaningful about the protection for the African Americans. I mean, everyone knows that this is one of the most legendary states in the United States for an African American not to be able to get a job. you can't get any kind of movement or debate. And by the way, your leaders are down in a there's a city here called Mankato, Minnesota, a medium-sized city, about 70,000. Minnesota State University is located in Mankato, and our leaders are having, I think it's the 30th annual Pan-African Conference, Mr. Allen. Did you go down?
You know what? No, I did not. I'm looking at the list of presenters. You know, we have people who I like and respect, Makbul Elkate, Kim Ellison. And then we have other people that I'm kind of indifferent with, Lisa Jones, Mary Whitney, Trancy Williams, Obi Kipper, and folks like that. And it was a call for, I'm looking at the call for papers and panel presentation for people to submit their proposals. And they were all due by January this year, 2013. And so the conference is in full effect. You know, the freak show is happening. And it's the 37th Michael T. Fagan Pan-African Student Leadership.
37. I said 30. Oh, my God, longer than that. Okay, 37.
Yeah, and you know, last night, 7 p.m., they had Judge Mathis as the keynote speaker. So,
oh, the TV judge.
The TV judge, yeah.
The judge comes on television, right.
Yes, okay. And so that was pretty interesting. I know some students that did go down there from Hamlin.
Let me ask you about the agenda, and then we're talking about this. And, of course, you've retrieved it via cyber. Probably did a better job than the Chinese are doing. Oops. But is there anything on the agenda? It's a 3-4-day conference of, I know, partying and et cetera, but is there, let me ask you two specific situations. Is there anything on there about jobs? Is there anything on there about the Voting Rights Act?
I don't see. I'm looking at it right now, and I don't see anything on here as far as an agenda other than the dates. Let me see. Adoption, blacks in business, blacks in college, blacks in business, blacks in higher education, retention for blacks in higher education, blacks in media, faith communities, social service agencies, health concerns, national, international black women.
Well, let me ask you this on the health concerns. Now, are they talking about things like, you know, hypertension, HIV, things like that, or just it's a discussion about health?
It looks, from what I'm seeing here for the call for papers, Mr. Edwards, it looks mostly like a call from social service agencies and nonprofits, rather to come down there. I don't really know who on that list of presenters could talk rationally about blacks in business. It doesn't seem. I'm indifferent with the whole format, and that's just me. That's my personal opinion. It might have something in there, but I don't see anything from the top about jobs.
Oh, okay. I just thought it's, you know, part of transparency and fairness that we talk about. Let's get that phone number out. I'm interested that we don't have anybody biting at all on the Voting Rights Act.
Yeah, and then we do have a caller online.
Oh,
right,
let's
now.
Get the caller. Always get the callers. Always get the callers.
You're live on the air, Marilyn.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you,
great
sir.
To catch your show live this time, because I've been listening to your shows last couple of weeks in the archive, and I got to tell you, man, I couldn't believe some of the conversations that were going on. I thought they were prank calls, but they were real. I couldn't believe. Let me say this. Hopefully I can contact you off the air. It's not a very extremely important matter. It sort of deals with access that certain organizations have, like the NAACP and the Urban League. We think that they are extinct and that they don't matter, but I think different. You know, they get an extremely large amount of access on certain issues that typical black organizations or black people are just not privy to. But I talk to you off the air about that. About the Voters' Rights Act, there are two ways that I look at this. On the local level, meaning you're running from school board, county commissioner, or city council, on a very local level, there's no difference between Republicans and Democrats. Typically, a white person is going to run in a party where they can get elected. There's no difference. So when you see changes being made, they happen all across the country in order to get more whites elected. Where they gerrymander, they change the rules all the time. Now, unfortunately, Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act only deals with certain areas in the South. But this happens all across the country. When the number of blacks increase, they chop up that black district to get whites elected or to dilute the black vote. And blacks say nothing. And then you have the national stage, like running for Congress or governor or big city mayor, where it's a little bit more difficult to play those games. So that's why a lot of people like Congressional Black Caucus or the Obama administration, they pretty much let that they don't say anything. Because it's the big issues on a big scale, there's a little difference between being a Democratic congressman and a Republican congressman. So you don't see those changes there. But either way, I do not see black people representing black constituents. So I say, what does it all mean? A black politician, I'm sorry, if he would represent a majority black district, will quickly tell you they just don't represent black people. They don't handle quote-unquote
right.
black issues. So I'm saying, well, what the hell does the Voters' Rights Act mean if the blacks who are – and they try to make it seem as if race wasn't involved in their being elected until they are their district is siphoned away, meaning they siphon black voters, right? Because in Maryland, what they did in one district is that they wanted to get rid of a Republican congressman. So they siphoned black voters from the majority black district, where it went from being, say, 65% black to about 52-53% black. But they siphoned just enough black voters away to the other district
to put a white Democrat in Congress.
Yeah, to get a white Democrat in.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Right.
And then that's when I'm gonna say, that's when the black congresswoman began to bellyache, saying they're trying to unseat her, destroy her seat because they're taking away her people. Now, before that time, she didn't say nothing about black. Nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. So I'm
right.
I'm a little perplexed as to what does it all mean in the end game for black people. And then one last thing. And I'm the only one to pick up on this stuff a lot, other than me and you, of course. I love listening to you because you're right.
Both of us, yeah. We're co-hosts. Two of us. Both,
yeah,
two of us. Here.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Both. Yeah, yes. I'm noticing. I ask myself, sir, and I'm sure W.B. Du Bois is rolling over in his grave. Because I ask myself, what does the talented 10th do today of our class?
Mm-hmm.
I look at the people who are going to the Supreme Court, who are arguing these cases on behalf, supposedly, of keeping Section 5 of the Voters' Rights Act alive to benefit, I don't know, African Americans. But when I look at the lawyers, the people who are speaking up, I see Koreans, I see Indians, I see white women.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, where are the strong black voices, the strong black lawyers? giving a certain take on these things as they directly affect the black community. I don't see that. I'm sorry. And I hear black people telling me all the time, oh, the Voters' Rights Act benefits Koreans. Like, hell, I don't want to say we try to make it seem as if I don't like immigrants, whatever. And we don't look at the larger point as to the reason why we have Section 5 is because black people for 75 years, when they got the vote in 72, I believe, all the way up until 1965, were lynched, were mocked and ridiculed just by attempting to register to vote in the black belt of Alabama. It was black. It wasn't Koreans. I love them, but it wasn't them. It wasn't East Indians. It wasn't Chinese. It wasn't Jews.
Mm-hmm.
It was blacks who were dealt with in this vicious manner. So let's not forget that.
Okay. All right, we got it. Appreciate your call. Continue to listen. Give us a call again. Thank you, sir, out of Maryland. All right. Interesting observation. Very profound, compelling observation, Mr. Allen, with respect to how quickly we forget why many of the issues pertaining to civil and human rights in this country came about. It had to do primarily with Native Americans and blacks. And I want to call Native Americans first as it pertains to the honor roll, because of the things that were done to Native Americans in taking this nation from them. Most vile situation, starting with the boy that came over from Europe who thought he had found India. That's the reason he named the people that he came across as Indians. They still don't know what to call them. But here's what was interesting, and I'll close with respect to this for our caller from Maryland. I found it amazing that it took the white mayor of New York City to guarantee that the Jesse Jackson Jr.'s seat, which had been in the hands of a black congressman for almost 40 years, was preserved because a white woman almost won that seat over an African-American state legislator who certainly could relate better. Michael Bloomberg put $2 million into that campaign to guarantee that the African-American community retained Jesse Jackson Jr.'s seat on the south side of Chicago. That was very interesting, and I think that speaks volumes of where we're at. And the question that the gentleman from Maryland asked about lawyers, because you and I know, Mr. Allen, listening to the legal barristers here in Minnesota and other places, all they're concerned with is, number one, being chose to be a partner in one of the big white prestigious law firms, which they're not, or getting a appointment to the courts, if you will. There is no longer any hard advocacy. And let me say this, because we had said in the production meeting, I just feel compelled to update people on DeMario Booker, a story that Mr. Allen and myself broke here a number of months ago.
Yeah.
Mr. Booker is still in the federal holding facility at Elk River, Minnesota, where he has been since he was taken out of a state courtroom here that was looking at a situation in which Mr. Booker was beaten to within an inch of his life. He is still in pain. He still has those plates in his face where his face was crushed by Officer Oates, who beat him almost to death. WCCO is pretending that they may take a look at the video. That's all a fake. But people need to know, because we broke that story. We're the only ones to continue to deal with it. I'm very disappointed in the lawyers and everyone else who have abandoned Mr. Booker as he is in an isolation cell in the federal protection facility. Maybe they could have let him out when they gave, clemency and amnesty to all of these Latinos and et cetera that were let out over the last week. Over 17,000 let out of detention centers under the amnesty program. Sad day for black America, Don. Sad day.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100% here, Mr. Edwards. It's some craziness going on, and we need to, take a closer look at it, get people more involved. And longer we just sit still and expect our elected officials to address this, these heinous discrepancies without any solutions, I mean, it's going to continue to go on. I see stuff almost every day that I just look at it and go, wow. You know, driving through Minneapolis, you know, St. Paul, and, you know, I know there has to be a better way to address these issues, especially, you know, with the Minneapolis public schools and the crap they've been pulling here in the last, since September 28, when I think UI and Lewis King was actually on board for that, where we told them to just fix one or step down, and they still haven't fixed just one. They still
before the Minneapolis School Board, you're absolutely correct. Yeah.
And
it never happened, won't happen. By the way, conflict at South High School now involving Mexican/Latino Hispanics. Solace 13, one of the most violent gangs in America and on the North American continent, now in play at South High School. They were fighting last Friday in the parking lot across the street there in the YWCA parking lot with brass knuckles.
Wow.
Solace 13 maintaining they are now on the scene. As I said before, one of the most dangerous gangs in America, on the North American continent. And superintendent and her internal staff doing everything they can to keep this down. By the way, two African-American police liaison officers removed from Patrick Henry High School on the north side of Minneapolis because they were too strong in their discipline of rowdiness and terror at Patrick Henry. Two African-American police officers removed, if you will. So a lot of things going on. We can't even begin to keep up with it, Mr. Allen, in an hour's time. Information flowing, and yet the community is basically being blocked from, information kept away from, if you will. Folks just, they really just don't have a clue about what's going on out here. Economic situation is not good. By the way, we will have an in-depth report next Saturday on a plan that has come about in which a black workforce fully qualified to meet all of the demands of the building of the People's Stadium has emerged, not here in Minnesota, but next week we will talk in terms of where they came from and what it is doing to the politics as it pertains to the Viking Stadium, by the way.
Okay. All right. That sounds like a plan. Well, we have a little bit under 3 minutes left for the show here for this hour, Mr. Edwards. Anything else, any other topics we want to talk about here?
Well, let me just do this quickly. There are some interesting changes. I promised some law enforcement, black law enforcement types. There have been some demotions by Chief Janae Harto within the Minneapolis Police Department that I think have caused a lot of people. You know, we talked about Mike Martin was knocked off, Lieutenant Ruggio, another one. But Ann Martin, the wife of Inspector, then Inspector, now back to Lieutenant Mike Martin, who was very much involved in the destruction of the African-American Police Officers Association. Ann Martin, who had been in the Fugitive Task Force for 15 years, removed from her position and told that she's going to have to go back to the streets.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Now, this is only extremely meaningful for those within law enforcement and et cetera. One other final piece. A lot of questions being asked about the fact that two of the key instigators and conspirators in destroying the Black Police Officers Association back in 2006 and 2007, Lieutenant Andy Smith and Sergeant Pat King, both Caucasians, have joined the Sheriff's Department, Don.
Wow.
With ranks of lieutenant and sergeant, same ranks they carried in Minneapolis. These are police officers who in trials last year, which were thrown out, by the way, they tried to maintain that black police officers had been responsible for them being suspended. And in the course of their testimony, and we'll, if anybody wants to call us next week, we'll go into even greater detail. We covered that entire trial. They maintained that black police officers in the Minneapolis Police Department were the most corrupt black police officers in the United States and referred to them under oath as scumbags. And Sheriff Richard Stanek has brought them aboard in his operation, particularly to deal with street crime and et cetera, particularly in the suburbs. So watch it. Watch real closely.
Okay. We'll definitely
All right,
do that.
Then,
Yep. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You've been listening to On Point. We'll be back next week, same time, same station.
I got something in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing, sing on.
Help me.
Lift every voice and sing.